Blog Talk Radio.
This is for you, Kings fans, wherever you may be. All the frustration and disappointment of the past is gone.
Yes, it is April 9th, 2018. Welcome to the JewelCast. This is our eighth episode of the 2017-18 season and the first one that takes place after the regular season and before the playoffs. We are very excited that we get to do a playoff preview because we weren't sure for a while, but the Kings did manage to come through in their final five games, and as we all so wisely kind of predicted before the season started, the Kings did end up making it in. So we're going to have a playoff preview podcast for you today. We're going to be joined by Danny from Knights on Ice, the SB Nation Las Vegas blog, to discuss the Vegas Golden Knights and try to pick at all their weaknesses. But for now, we're going to talk Kings for a few minutes, and I am joined today by podcast regulars, Sarah and James. Sarah, James, how you doing?
Yo. I exist.
You do. That's
hey.
Great.
Hey, Erica, how are you doing?
I am doing very well. I was not ready for the heat wave today. It kind of makes sense, I guess, given that we're seeing a playoffs of Anaheim and San Jose and Vegas and LA in the Pacific, that the warmth was going to come in and just overtake us all. But everything's going good.
Yeah.
James,
I'm going to...
Oh, yeah. It snowed yesterday. Did it snow today too, Sarah?
Yes, I hate it.
I swear I wasn't trying to rub it in your face.
No,
oh, it's been alternating heat waves. Alternating heat waves and rain up here in NorCal.
Weather is just so exciting, isn't it? We'll have to ask Danny. We're going to talk about the weather for the next hour and a half, everybody. I'm glad you tuned in.
Well, before we get started,
we are going to talk about hockey. Yes.
Yeah, before we get started, I just wanted to point out, did you know Canada changed its anthem in February?
Oh, do tell.
Canada changed one line of its anthem. So it used to be, oh, Canada, our home and native land, true patriot love. Mm-hmm. It used to be, in all thy son's commands, but not anymore. In February, it got changed to make it gender neutral. Now it's, in all of us command.
Mm-hmm.
Can we get you to sing on every podcast?
Canada update.
I figure as hockey fans, we should all know that. I think if you are a hockey fan for over a year, you've memorized the Canadian anthem, whether you like it or not. And so I just wanted to bring you guys up to date so you guys can be authentic hockey fans.
I appreciate that. It's very difficult for all of us down in the Pacific Division because, as you know, unless you live in Calgary or Edmonton or Vancouver, it's really hard to prove your credentials. So we'll have to catch Danny up on that too later. But it's so exciting. And we won't have to sing the Canadian National Anthem, I think, until potentially the Western Conference Finals. But I don't want to jump ahead here because we have to talk about the here and now, which is the Kings and the Knights. Let's real quick before we move on to the playoff preview. I know that James, you're not going to be on for the full call, so I want to get your two cents on everything, especially since you weren't on our last podcast. So first of all, thoughts on the finish to the season and how the Kings are looking for the playoffs.
Well, the first podcast we did this year, I reluctantly predicted they were going to make the playoffs simply because I'm a fan. I didn't want to say no to that question. And and the Kings have proven me wrong, and they I'm very pleasantly surprised, and that trade with the trade for Phaneuf was brilliant, and also trading away Kemper was brilliant, because without giving up their core, without giving up their prospects, they were able to trade nothing and get something in return. We knew Gabrick was declining and to a point of no return, and we knew Kemper was not going to return next year because, you know, he's not going to come back as the backup. He wants to be a starter. So in both instances, we got nothing for something, and we especially got rid of the intractable contract that Gabrick had and brought back somebody who can – now we have, with Phaneuf, three good, solid defensive anchors, and we can free up Alec Martinez to get more involved with the offense, and it's been doing really well for the Kings, and you know, it's amazing to see career seasons from not just Kopitar and not just Doughty, but also Dustin Brown as well. All three of them have had career seasons this year, and that's fueled their resurgence this year. So I'm pleasantly surprised, but the one thing that concerns me is Jake Muzzin. We got Carter back, who was on a torrid pace. He could have had a career season this year, but now I'm concerned about Muzzin.
Yeah, and Sarah, I'm going to let you choose whether we talk about Dustin Brown or the defense next. So what would you prefer to talk about for the next minute or two?
Let's just get the defense out of the way, because that's what's giving me nightmares.
Ah, I didn't expect that. Okay, so right now we've got Jake Muzzin out of the lineup for the hopefully near future. We've got Derek Forbert out for the slightly more than near future. It appears that Forbert has been ruled out of game one, and I'm assuming the first round entirely, whereas Muzzin has at least been skating. Forbert has not gone on the ice yet. So with the Phaneuf trade, James, you're right, we do have warm bodies to play. I think Oscar Fantenberg right now is the favorite to draw into the lineup, but we do have at least three guys with substantial playoff experience. Sarah, what's your outlook for the defense in this first round?
I think a lot of it depends on if/when Jake Muzzin comes back and what form he's in. I know everyone's been kind of split on the Phaneuf trade, and like I come out a little more like, okay, it was good. And now I'm even more on the page of, okay, good plan, because if we didn't have Dion Phaneuf, like, we'd be out even more defensemen. They're going to run out of guys to play. So having him there and having him be like, you know, a veteran presence who at least has the hockey IQ and the passing ability, if not the foot speed and mobility that we'd want, makes me a little less anxious. But, you know, we sometimes pick on Derek Forbert, but he had been playing really good hockey lately as the end of the season kind of wound up. And so being without him makes me a little iffy. Fantenberg didn't really impress me very much in the last game, but then again, neither did really anyone on the team for the most part. But he does seem the most likely candidate to draw in. Rest in peace, Kevin Gravel. We hardly knew you. but I feel like there's a lot more question marks in the defense, especially if it takes Jake Muzzin longer to get back than we would like it to take.
Yeah, it's going to be, I think, the biggest question mark and the second biggest question mark and the third biggest question mark for the Kings, because a lot of the forwards playing well or not are at least in shape to contribute. And the Jonathan Quick obviously is raring to go. So it really kind of does fall on the defense. James, do you think that leaving Gravel out of this lineup, as opposed to a Paul Ledoux or an Oscar Fantenberg, is the right move here? Because right now we've got Fantenberg and Doughty, Martinez and Fullen, and Phaneuf and Ledoux as the practice pairings, which may not hold. Would you slot Gravel in for any of the guys that are in right now?
No. Right now I have my vote of no confidence on Kevin Gravel. He really struggled in the second to last game. He had a lot of trouble, a great deal of trouble getting the puck out of the defensive zone. So, you know, magnify that with the playoff pressure, and it's going to be a disaster. I don't think he's going to be able to adapt fast enough to the playoff game. And same with Vandenberg. I mean, he was in the lineup for about 25 games or so, but I think he fell out of favor with the Kings' coaching, unfortunately, in favor of a guy like Christian Follin, who, you know, who's a candidate to entertain the crowd with the hit of the night every night. And I think he's more compatible with the defensive identity of the team. I don't think they're ready to switch to a lighter mobile defense like Vandenberg.
Yeah, and I think Follin, you're right. I think Follin has taken that Braden McNabb seat, and I'm interested to hear from Danny later in the show about Braden McNabb's season, because he's been getting a pretty heavy workload. He's, I think, paired with Nate Schmidt at the moment. At least he was in practice today. Thanks, John Rosen, for posting that. So it's an interesting conundrum, and it is.
Well,
I mean, it's kind of fascinating. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, hopefully, you know, I think the Kings are going to try their very hardest and to bring Jake Muzzin back, and hopefully that'll alleviate a lot of the concerns. You know, Muzzin at even 70%, you know, would be better than overplaying Alec Martinez, or, you know, bringing in Gravel or Vandenberg, or having Phaneuf play extended minutes as well. So I think they're going to try their hardest to bring Muzzin back, and that'll alleviate a lot of their concerns, because, you know, without him, then Vegas will start having a competitive advantage with its second and third defensive pairings. You know, when you're talking about McNabb and Spezza and those types of players.
Yeah, and I still don't know what to make of the Vegas defense, because it's even after a season where Vegas won the division and a lot of their players had breakout seasons, it's still just a hard defense to read on paper, I think. And it's, you still are looking at guys who are, you know, they've got Derek Englund playing big minutes. They've got their John Merrills and, like you said, Lucas Spezza, who's coming back from injury. And we all really liked Colin Miller as a prospect, and Shea Theodore is a great prospect too. But it's these are guys who I think are all new, except maybe for Schmidt, to real significant playoff action, or in the case of guys like Englund and McNabb, who haven't been there as recently, and who I assume are going to be playing bigger minutes than they've played in recent memory. So it's going to be a battle of wills there, and especially with both forward groups pretty healthy. The Kings are getting Alex Iafallo back, it seems, if not in game one, very, very soon. Whereas Vegas is still waiting for David Perron to come back, and he is probably going to be available at some point in this series, but skated as an extra today. So, Sarah, thoughts on the forward matchup?
Oh, man. I feel like we've watched Vegas for so many games, and much like the defense, like, there's just so many, not question marks, because we know James Neal is a good performer, especially in the playoffs. William Karlsson somehow has turned into a magician. I think that there's a lot of untested guys in there, which I think is where the Kings' advantage could come in, because there are so many, even with all the young faces we have in the Kings lineup, you know, with, you know, Kempe and Amadio and Iafallo and them, that haven't had the NHL playoff grind. I think there's just more people who know the playoffs really do take it to a different level. I don't know that there's that, you know, without looking up everyone's past history, you know, how many proven playoff performers are there in there? I know, you know, Eric Halla, from watching him when he was with Minnesota in playoff series against Chicago, like, he's a nightmare in the playoffs. But he, you know, can he replicate that, you know, in this series? Was it just he decided to dominate Chicago? Like, who knows? so I think in terms of, you know, veteran playoff experience, you know, the Kings, have the upper hand of knowing, you know, what to expect and what it really takes to kind of, I think there was a quote from John Stevens from practice talking about, you know, what it takes to like dig down deep, you know, to get through the playoffs, because it really is a whole different thing. Vegas has the speed, both in, you know, their puck movement and just skating in general, that I think could be more difficult for the Kings to deal with. There aren't that many, you know, guys who have, you know, maybe each line has one guy who's good for like a big burst of speed, which is great that we, you know, Tobias Reeder's really been a good addition in that sense. So I think that, you know, the Kings are going to have to find some way to counter that, either by, you know, letting their speedy guys go head to head with them, or by trying to dictate the play to their style that's a little more not quite so fleet of foot all the time. So I think that could be a big issue for kind of the forwards, is, you know, just keeping up with Vegas if they're playing their game.
Yeah, and looking kind of inwardly here, before we get Danny on the cast to sort of explain Vegas's threats, especially beyond that top line, who we all know about, I think, at this point. The Kings, first of all, are getting Alex Iafallo back, as I mentioned, and you did bring up Reeder as well. Two guys who, on this team with so many guys who have played dozens of playoff games, are new to the scene. So, James, for Iafallo and for Reeder, what are you expecting their impact to be here?
Well, I think Reeder's impact is going to be canceled out by the overwhelming speed of the Golden Knights. I mean, Iafallo, you know, we all love him. He's arguably the best forechecker on the team. So, you know, we're going to bring him playing with Brown and Kopitar again to help make their shifts last a little longer, so that those two can have a bigger impact. The thing with I think the X factor for the Kings is, the Kings forwards, is actually going to be Nate Thompson, because he's the faceoff specialist. The best way to cancel out the speed of Vegas is going to be, you know, with not just with heavy hitting, but also to play the field position game, you know, to force an icing, to draw a penalty, to, you know, to make them to knock a puck out of play, to get it deflected out of play. And then you need a guy like Nate Thompson to win the faceoff so that you can be back on offense again. So I think he's going to be one of the big X factors of the Kings. I think with Vegas, you know, their reputation is preceding them a great deal. They started out, you know, white hot in the first half of the season. But if you look at the second half of the season, they've been showing some vulnerability. The last 20 games, they are .500, just like many other teams in the league. They've shown some vulnerability as the season has petered out. And not only that, like you said, Eric, their defense is very young, and also their offense is very young. William Karlsson, their leading scorer, is very young. So, you know, it's as afraid as am I that it might turn out to be another Sharks 2016, where, you know, speed and willpower overtook us. I think the difference between Vegas and the Sharks is, you know, the Sharks are playoff tested, and they, you know, went through those tough losing experiences. Vegas hasn't had that background yet. The playoffs is going to be very different.
Sarah, are you in agreement on kind of the approach that James is suggesting, where it's more of a control game, attempting to retain the puck a little bit, retain possession a little bit, and maybe manage the game? Or do you think that's going to prove more difficult against Vegas?
I think that I would prefer them to take that route, to just kind of focus a little more on the, you know, retaining the puck. And I don't want to like harken back to like the Daryl Sutter days of like, we have the puck and we took some shots, but we didn't really do anything with it. But, you know, that is kind of, if you want to take the Golden Knights like speed out of the equation, The Kings being a lot more deliberate and a lot more responsible with their puck management is going to go a long way towards them being able to dictate, you know, the speed and the pace of the game and being able to play their own game and not get sucked into Vegas trying to turn into a track meet. So I would like to see them focus a little more on, you know, just sort of that like steady game, especially for, you know, a lot of times in games one and two, teams are a little more cautious as they're feeling each other out, especially since the Kings will be starting on the road and we don't know how John Stevens is going to be with trying to do a little gamesmanship with his line matching and everything. Especially until they get a feel for the series, I'd like to see them just focus more on, you know, the detail plays and hanging on to the puck and not just throwing it and seeing what happens. Once they lose it, they're done.
Well, the Kings don't need to depend so much on, you know, heavy puck possession time like they did with Sutter, because that's gonna fall out of the wayside with such a fast team. Rather, what John Stevens has allowed them to do is they're now free to counterattack. So like what they did against the Ducks were overwhelming with the possession game, but the Kings counterattacked. And, you know, if Kempe or Pearson, you know, scored on their scoring chances at the end, then, you know, it might have been a different outcome. So I think we're looking for counterattacks with the Kings. And also, with the Ducks, we're going to see a lot of Kings fans in the stands on the road. So I think that'll help as well.
Yeah, I don't necessarily question the approach of retaining possession. I do think that it would have been tougher earlier in the season against a Vegas team that was playing the way they were for the first half of the season. This, even through game 50 or so, the Knights were not only winning games, they were out shooting every team they played against. They were beating them to pucks. They weren't, you know, with a team that fast, you could see the counterattacking being their primary approach. Instead, they were just grinding teams early too. We saw it in the first two games with the Kings. So it's an approach that I think has some wisdom, and I think the Kings can afford to be a little more patient than they would have been earlier in the season. But the counterattacking has been surprisingly good for a team that didn't do it a whole lot. Maybe you'd see Jeff Carter do it every couple games, and otherwise it was almost non-existent. And this year, you're right, we've seen a lot more of that. Go ahead, James.
And what's imperative for the Kings is that both goaltenders need to be over 100% on their game. The Kings are depending on goaltending more than the Golden Knights. I'm thinking about that game where Jack Campbell got his first win. Although the score was pretty lopsided, the game was much closer than the score indicated. Vegas was peppering Campbell with chances, and he played the best game of his life, and that's why was able to keep the puck away and win it for them 4-1. Look out for Vegas to continue to pepper the net, and the Kings will need to get, you know, their A-plus game from Jonathan Quick each time.
Yeah, and that's the earliest concern I think I had with this matchup is the Kings didn't really have a game this year where they outplayed Vegas. They didn't have games against a lot of teams where they just consistently outplayed them wire to wire, but with Vegas, you can look at that last game with Campbell as, oh, Vegas was getting better chances because they were trailing by a goal and then two goals and three goals. The other game that the Kings won, they tied up, I think, in the last minute, and that was a more consistent effort back to front or front to back, I thought, but still not a game where you really walked away thinking the Kings are better than the Golden Knights. So I think the recent games have sort of evened this matchup a little bit. But especially with Muzzin and Forbert out on the back, the Kings, like you said, James, they need really good goaltending, and they have to play largely mistake-free hockey, which we've seen more of recently than we did in that January-February stretch. So that's encouraging. The last thing I guess that we'll talk about before we turn to more Vegas talk is Dustin Brown's 4-goal game, because that was the big noteworthy event from that last stretch of the season. We had, I believe, the Kings with a 3-1-1 record over that final stretch, which Sarah may or may not have predicted. Sarah, I think you
sure did.
Said exactly what was going to happen. Yeah.
Yep.
So we So no surprise, I guess. But the Dustin Brown game, Sarah, what did you just talk about it? I guess just talk about Dustin Brown's four goal game.
It was amazing. First off, like when he scored the winner, I just started laughing because like I don't know what else to do, because anytime someone gets two goals, we're like, ooh, hat trick for, you know, Alec Martinez scored two. And I was like, ooh, can he do it too? You know, anytime someone gets three goals, we're like, ooh, can they go for four? But like, you don't think that Dustin Brown's going to do it. He got almost to 30 goals this year, which I don't think anyone, even the like most optimistic of Kings fans, I don't think would have predicted that. And the goals that he was scoring, like, they were skill goals. They weren't him just standing in front of the goalie, banging a puck in off of someone else's, you know, rebound or shoving it under a pad. Like they were goals that took some effort and skill and hands that people don't associate with Dustin Brown. So it was a little bit of a nice way for him to cap off his season. My joke has always been that I knew that I was a true Kings fan once I started defending Dustin Brown from people who said mean things about him. So I feel like this game was extra important for other people to see, see what he actually is capable of. It was just a dominant performance from him. And, you know, the fact that, you know, he and Kopitar both have had these ridiculous four-goal games this year, in addition to Jeff Carter's completely random hat trick, you know, it's just good to see that, you know, the core guys who, you know, are just bouncing back and have put last year behind them. And, you know, we wouldn't have seen that performance out of Dustin Brown anytime in the past couple of years for many reasons. It was just a fun game, which I think we all kind of needed at this point of the season.
Yeah,
and it came after that Colorado game too, which was another pretty massive moment. James, you had some thoughts as well?
Yeah, and John Rosen in his blog, he observed that one of the big factors for the resurgence of Dustin Brown is putting him regularly alongside with Kopitar rather than under Sutter, having him try to anchor his own line, putting them together. You know, you saw some chemistry, the way they skated together and positioned themselves, you know, according to each other in some of those plays. And for the Kings, you know, one key for the Kings to win this series is that their stars need to dominate. The Kopitar, Doughty, and Brown, they need to dominate and play with leadership and really just turn the table and turn the ice in their favor. The Vegas is a much more balanced team than the Kings. But the Kings have asymmetry. Their stars are much better than the stars that Vegas has. So the stars need to really dominate the game, and that'll be the Kings to win the series.
And we looked at a couple games down the stretch that were against playoff teams. They, you know, the Kings had Arizona on the schedule. They had Dallas on the schedule. But the big game was the third to last game of the season against Colorado, where LA essentially knocked up a playoff berth against the Avs. And that was I think the Minnesota game was more similar to a Vegas game, where there's a little more balance up and down the lineup. Colorado, I think, was more about making sure Nathan MacKinnon didn't go crazy on the Kings. And naturally they put Andre Kopitar matched up against him for the majority of that one. And as encouraging as that was to win a pressure game, and I think it's something that's going to help the Kings, that they've had some of these critical games they've come through in, it was a different team that they played against because they were so focused on stopping the top-end guys. We got, I think, Torrey Mitchell and Kyle Clifford both scored against Colorado, and that's a nice thing to count on for maybe one game of the series, but it is going to be so much on those top-end players. So regardless of how it was done, the Kings did end up squeaking in between game 80 and game 81, and they won one of those less meaningful games, and then, of course, they lost to Minnesota, helping to put them into this first-round matchup with the Golden Knights. So right now we are going to switch over to Danny, who is currently on hold, and I'm going to have him on the air in just a minute. So, James, you're welcome to hang around if you have to go. Thank you so much for joining. And, Sarah, I think you're going to stay online as well, right?
All right. Well,
sure
it's
thing.
Been a pleasure. I'll talk to you again.
All right. Thanks, James. So let's go ahead and now bring Danny on. Danny, of course, as I mentioned earlier, runs the Vegas Golden Knights SB Nation blog, Knights on Ice. And Danny, are you on the line?
I am on the line. How you guys doing?
Great. It worked. I can't believe it. We haven't had a guest, I think, from another SB Nation site in a while. So I think this is the time to bring it back for a playoff matchup. So, Danny, let's start with you're very special, Danny. And we're going to be really nice to you, at least for the duration of this podcast. And after game one or so, I think it might get a little tense.
That's totally fine. I kind of expected that. We'll be nice to you guys, too. Whenever we decide to do our podcast again, we'll make sure to be nice to you guys, too.
Thanks. I really appreciate that. It's nice not playing a team that I already hate or have terrible memories of losing to.
Well, I guess that's the benefit of having to play an expansion team, right?
Yeah, yeah, and it could go really, really far south. But let's go ahead and just launch right into this Vegas matchup. So I want to get sort of the lay of the land from you. We talked about the Kings' injuries. We talked about Jake Muzzin and Derek Forbert being out of the lineup. We talked about Alex Iafallo healing up. We did not talk about Trevor Lewis having twins, which we are definitely going to do at the end of the podcast. So what are the sort of current storylines for Vegas in terms of how their lineup is shaking out?
Well, for the last couple of weeks, Vegas has had to really survive without Riley Smith, without David Perron, two of their top six guys. And part of it has kind of been of a struggle because they've had to not only plug in guys that have been call-ups from the AHL, but at the same time, they've had to also integrate guys into the lineup via the trade deadline, of course, that meaning Ryan Reeves and Tomas Tatar. So pretty much since the trade deadline, very, very good to say Vegas hasn't really played a full strength lineup for the better part of a month. But it looks like they're getting healthy now. Riley Smith returned last week. Perron is still out. Who knows what's going on with him? Apparently it's a minor injury. That's all we know. But Riley Smith is back. He fortifies that first line. Obviously with Jonathan Marchessault and William Karlsson. Other than that, it's pretty much just a matter of will Perron be able to go in game one? My guess is that he probably will. Everything else is pretty much the same. Of course, you got Marc-Andre Fleury in goal. You have Malcolm Subban backing him up. It's pretty much going to rely on those two guys, meaning Smith and Perron, if they're healthy, and if that's going to be the key for Vegas in this series.
And we, I think, all thought that a Sharks matchup with the Kings was going to be inevitable, but I should have realized that even more inevitable would be David Perron against Jonathan Quick in the playoffs, because that has been building for years and years and years. I guess from your perspective, Danny, we're going to talk about Marchessault, Karlsson, Smith in a minute, but of that forward group, who do you think is going to have the biggest impact on the series outside of that first line?
Outside of that first line, I look at the second line, and it's probably going to be a combination of either Eric Halla or James Neal. I think those guys, Halla especially, has come out of nowhere to score. I believe I lost count. I think it's 28, 29 goals this year. He's had one hell of a season. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, there's James Neal when you factor in what he's done in the playoffs. And obviously, he's probably got that itch to want to redeem himself after playing with a broken hand last year in the Stanley Cup Finals. So I look at those two guys, and I think they're going to be the key factors into this one. And if you're looking for maybe another X factor outside of the top six, I think Alex Tuch might be the guy to look at, the rookie forward who has been kind of shuffling up and down the line the last few weeks, obviously with the injuries to Smith and Perron. I think Tuch has probably played his best stretch of hockey in the last couple weeks, and part of that is to has to be due to the injuries and having him play with Carlson and Marchessault on the first line. But I think Alex Tuch is coming into form at the right time, and if he can somehow play at the same type of level that he played with in the last couple weeks and carry that over to that third line, which is going to be very key because that third line does not generate any offense at all. If he can somehow bring that level of play to the playoffs on that and be the scoring catalyst on that bottom six, I think it's going to be a huge key for Vegas in this series.
Yeah, and I'm intrigued that you brought up Tuch because Neil and Hala, I think actually Sarah, you mentioned that Hala tormented the Blackhawks in the playoffs a couple of years ago and is maybe someone the Kings will be looking out for. But Tuch, I think, in the last game against the Kings, or the second to last game in the Kings, probably should have had a hat trick. He was buzzing the entire night. He didn't end up putting one in the net, but he had several really good chances and was either denied by excellent saves or missed the net, I think, on at least one nearly open net. So Tuch has 15 goals this season, which is probably about where I figured he would be, unlike most of the guys on the Knights who have way more goals than I think anyone anticipated. So that's an interesting name to bring up, and it's one that I'll be looking out for. Sarah, I guess when it comes to the Kings, do you have an answer to that same question? Maybe which forward outside of that top line is going to be a difference maker here?
I want to say Adrian Kempe because he can't possibly go forever without scoring another goal. and he, you know, in the past, you know, whenever he first came over to North America and played with then the Manchester Monarchs and won the Calder Cup with them, you know, he performed really well in the playoffs. He's performed really well in the playoffs when he was still playing in Europe. So I would like to think that he will be able to elevate his game and, you know, is a guy who could pose like a matchup problem to other teams, to Vegas, because if he kind of starts getting on a tear where he finds his, you know, offensive touch again, then you start having to think about defending against his line as well. So he's kind of who I'm rooting for as a potential X factor for the Kings, of a guy to look out for.
Yeah, and he's the one guy who feels like a sort of in the situation where a lot of the Vegas guys are in, where he's never had any playoff experience. He's someone who the Kings are going to look to on a lower line to provide that depth scoring. Whereas Iafallo, maybe they don't need the scoring as much as they just need him to be in the lineup. For Vegas, we can't go any longer without talking about that top line. Now that we've covered sort of the rest of the lineup in short, Danny, do you, and I'm sure you've been getting this question all year in various forms, can they keep doing what they've been doing?
I think it's possible. I obviously, when you talk about the Stanley Cup playoffs, it's an entirely different monster. And you're talking about three guys, including Riley Smith, who haven't had a lot of playoff experience. And that's the one thing I'm looking at throughout this entire roster, with the exception of a number of people. But the guys that have stepped up this year, mainly Marchessault, mainly Carlson, they haven't really been tested in the playoffs. I know Marchessault was on the Tampa team a couple of years ago that made it to the Eastern Conference Finals, but I don't think he got that much playing time when he was on Tampa Bay. And obviously Carlson was playing on the bottom six in Columbus last year, and he really wasn't that much of a factor. But I think what helps, and it's going to help a lot with Riley Smith coming back. Riley Smith, his most underrated trait on this team is his ability to possess the puck and not turn it over. And I think if you have a guy like that, and that also helps when you have a guy like David Perron when he's healthy, because he does a great job of maintaining the puck as well. But I think especially in a seven-game series, you're going to need guys that can hold on to the puck and not turn it over. And that's how Vegas has been very good this year, is that they haven't made a lot of mistakes, especially on the top six. So when you have Smith coming back, if he's pretty much the quarterback of that first line, which there was a stretch of, I want to say, like seven games where Marchessault and Carlson, I think, were on a huge scoring slump. And it was definitely definitely noticeable when Riley Smith was not in the lineup, because if they're not scoring, pretty much the entire team is incapable of scoring. So if he comes back, if he comes back healthy, that gives you a guy that can maintain possession of the puck, can make the right passes to wherever Carlson, Marchessault are. And that's one. That's another good trait for them. They are so good without the puck. It is insane. I've never seen two guys skate so well without the puck, and they've done so well with it. And having a guy like Smith who can make the right passes, make the right reads, and get them the puck where they need it, I think that gives Vegas a whole good enough reason to believe that Carlson and Marchessault especially can keep this production up in the first round, and especially going forward.
And one of the Kings' bigger moments of the season was managing to sort of turn the tie back on Vegas, at least in those final two games. But that third of the four games in the season series, Smith had a play where it was in the first minute of the third period, recovers the puck behind the net, outworks one or two guys, manages to somehow get a shot on it quick, and then somehow manages to get a second chance and puts one up top, basically going one on three. And that was a potential backbreaking goal, and it probably should have been a backbreaking goal. And that's I think what got me the most the first couple of times the Kings played the Golden Knights was how capable they were of making plays like that and recovering pucks in the offensive zone. The Kings just were not prepared for it at all. So if the rest of the games went like those two, I think this would be a very short series. But the Kings did manage to sort of gain some ground, and at least in the last game, they got a standout goaltending performance that made it the one game that wasn't really tight at the end. So that's sort of the forward situation. Talking about the defense, I think there are two names that the Kings fans are really interested in, because they probably both in an alternate universe are playing on the Kings blue line right now. First, Braden McNabb. And surprisingly, I think because of the big three of Doughty and Muzzin and Martinez getting so many minutes, and partially because Doughty and Muzzin have been really excellent this year, there hasn't been too much talk about Braden McNabb around these parts. But how has he slotted into the Vegas lineup? It seems like he's been a regular for the Golden Knights, and he's clearly had a decent season, even if he's not scoring all that much. What have your thoughts been in McNabb's first season?
He's been very solid. He's been on the top defensive pairing all season with Nate Schmidt, and he's kind of taken that role ever since Lucas Pisa. He's been in and out of the lineup himself throughout the season, but Braden McNabb has kind of slid into that top defensive pairing with Nate Schmidt, and I think he's done fairly well. Doesn't go to the penalty box much. He lays enough hits on you to where you know he's there. He's a definitely good counterpart to Schmidt, in the fact that Schmidt is more of the speedy, shutdown power play kind of guy, and McNabb is kind of like the defensive presence on the night that really isn't there in the other five guys. He's the guy that I think it's 150 hits and 100. There's a stat that McNabb is like one of 20 defensemen that has it, and it has something to do with hits, but I can't remember what the other one is. But
maybe he hits and blocks.
That's probably it. It's probably hits and blocks, something like that.
But
no, he's been very solid. He's a guy that, you know, he's going to surprise you every now and then with the occasional goal, as he did against Edmonton the other night, which was really shocking. I think that's probably the easiest goal he's ever going to get in his life. But outside of that, you know, he's the guy that, you know, is the defensive presence on this team, and he's done extremely well. And he's definitely earned the top D pairing minutes that he's gotten with Schmidt. And, you know, I think he's definitely a good complement to the other defensemen on this team.
Yeah, and I ended up looking it up because you were talking about it, and he's not only does he have over 150 block shots, 150 hits, he's got 176 block shots, 225 hits, and both of those he's leading Vegas in both of those categories, and I assume that's not something that is common league wide. So that's something that the Kings haven't necessarily needed this season. They've got several really capable shot blockers. They've always had guys who can hit, and on defense at least they've had Christian Follin sort of squat in taking more of that role. But McNabb has, it seems like, fit in really seamlessly over there. The other defenseman is Colin Miller, who was a Kings fifth round draft pick, one of their biggest low round steals in recent years, or at least he would have been if he hadn't been traded for Martin Jones or for Milan Lucic in that Martin Jones trade. Miller's played 82 games this season for Vegas, and how have those 82 games been? And please, if they've been really good, try to lie to me a little bit so I don't feel sad.
No, Miller has been one of those guys that's been a real surprise for Vegas this year, because when you first started breaking down the defensive pairings, you noticed the immediates right away. And I'm talking about Derek Englund, because he's the Las Vegas resident. Shea Theodore, because he's basically given to Vegas for literally absolutely nothing, except for Clayton Stoner's salary. And then there's Nate Schmidt, and then you thought about McNabb. Colin Miller has been a huge surprise this year, because I don't think a lot of people understood going into this season how vicious of a shot he has from the point. It is probably one of the more lethal shots, I think, from any defenseman in the National Hockey League. And his ability to play on that bottom pairing, whether it be with John Merrill or Brad Hunt or Lucas Pisa, whoever the case may be, after you go down the first four and you have to deal with Schmidt and Theodore, now you got a guy in Colin Miller who blasts shots from the point, and he's having a career year in terms of scoring. And he's a guy that I think Vegas values as its future defensive pairing with Theodore. But coming into this year, I don't think anybody expected Miller to have the year that he's having. He has exceeded everybody's expectations. And the crazy part is that I feel like he can get even better, because there are aspects of his game where I watch him and I'm like, you know, if he could just add in this little element, because you could see it in Theodore. He's a guy that when he takes the puck, he, you know, breezes through the face-off circle. He's already past the blue line, and he's already playing like he's a forward. I feel like Miller is almost to that level, and if he gets to that level, he could be one of the best offensive defensemen in the league. But he's already got such a well-rounded offensive game. He does well, you know, on 5-on-5. He does well on the power play. I feel like there are a little bit of elements where if he adds it to his game, he's going to be one of the best offensive defensemen in the league at some point in time. But he has definitely been, I think, one of the biggest surprises of this season for the Golden Knights, and definitely one of the more unexpected surprises for this team.
Yeah, and I think when it comes to McNabb, like I said, there were plenty of guys who were able to step in and sort of replace what he brought to the team. Miller is a more interesting case, because the guys that can do what Miller does with the hard shot from the blue line, especially, as you said, on the power play, and that offensive productivity. They get it from Drew Doughty and Jake Muzzin, who are sort of do-it-all guys, but they haven't been able to find someone who can play on a lower pair and provide that kind of output. So that's, I think, something that the Kings have to look out for a lot once they get past that top pair of Schmidt and McNabb. Suddenly they're dealing with a guy who, if I remember right, won the hardest shot in the AHL and then came up and translated that to the league. So it's we talked a lot about the sort of conundrum the Kings are facing at the bottom of their top six defensemen before you came on. Is there any sort of question about who's going to fill the bottom pair for Vegas? Is it going to be two guys, or are you expecting some shuffling?
As far as the defensive pairing goes?
Yeah.
You know what, I think they're going to roll with who they've had all year as far as who they're going to throw out there as the sixth defenseman, obviously. I think right now they have eight total defensemen. So I guess it depends on who they feel is the better matchup for that one. And that's the one thing about Gerard Gallant is he always pinpoints the right matchups for the team. And I'm sure it'll come up differently when we get to playoff time and how he goes about it. But right now, I think it stays the same. He's going to go with the with the group that skates well, skates fast. That's why I think McNabb and Schmidt are probably going to see a lot of action against that top line of Los Angeles. And then Theodore and Englund, who have been a really good yin and yang, it seems like. Theodore, the young guy who has the ability to be really good in this league for many years, and Englund, the old veteran who can still do the occasional right thing at the right time. And then you have Miller and whoever in the world he's going to pair with, because that sixth defenseman spot might be up for grabs. I think right now it stays the same unless you know, guys like Kopitar, Dustin Brown, you know, the guys that are, you know, been on a tear lately. If they get hot, then I think Gallant's going to probably want to change something up. But right now I think they stick the same. I think you'll see McNabb and Schmidt in the first pairing, Theodore and Englund on the second pairing, and then Miller and I guess Merrill. I think John Merrill might be the sixth guy, unless Lucas Pisa can promise the coaching staff he will not get hurt for the remainder of time. I think it'll probably be John Merrill going forward for sure. So I think seeing those six guys would be your best bet.
Okay. Yeah, and we talked that to death, I think, at least on the Kings side. So good to hear that there's at least a similar sort of battle for that sixth spot on Vegas' side. That'll be something to watch. So let's talk about the goalies. And Sarah, I'll start with you because we barely talked about Jonathan Quick before Danny jumped on. So I'm going to ask you both a very similar question and ask you to sort of argue in favor of your guy. So Sarah, tell me why Jonathan Quick is going to outplay Marc-Andre Fleury in the first round.
I think that Quick's gone into the playoffs playing really solid hockey, if we ignore the Dallas game, which I don't think should count for anything. He in that last kind of five game stretch, you know, he looked like he was, you know, tracking the puck really well. He was aggressive in the crease, but not to the point where I like needed to go breathe into a bag. You know, I think this is one of the playoff matchups where, you know, you put two players head to head and you can't say, oh, well, this guy has more playoff experience or more, you know, than the other guy, because these are both two very decorated, experienced goalies. But I think that this kind of matchup kind of suits Jonathan Quick's game because he likes those, you know, very emotional, very high stakes kind of games. You know, I feel like this matchup has every potential to be a very Ducks-like matchup, and we know how he gets when he's playing against them. So I think that the fact that he's, you know, been relatively healthy the whole season, aside from that random blip in, you know, kind of January where the whole team sort of forgot how to play hockey. You know, he's
sure.
just had a really overall strong season. So I think that he's going in on the right note to really, you know, stay on top of his game and be able to not let so many pucks behind him.
Which is always the goal. Danny, I guess we'll flip it around then. What are your thoughts on that goalie matchup, and why do you think Fleury maybe has an edge against Quick?
Well, definitely, I think this is a great test for both teams. I think you got a guy in Quick who has established himself in the postseason in this decade, and I think it's a great test to see where Vegas is at, especially in playoff-wise. And I think it's a good test for the Kings as well, because they're getting probably what could arguably be the best version of Marc-Andre Fleury of his entire career. Best goals against average in his entire career, best save percentage of his entire career. I think when you look at Fleury, and I don't know exactly how much players really buy into the whole aspect of having themselves with something to prove, but if there's one guy on this franchise that has something to prove and the fact that he's going to get a chance to show it in the playoffs, it's Marc-Andre Fleury. Obviously, you know, he played extremely well in the playoffs last year with Pittsburgh, had the huge win in Game 7 against Washington, and then he had the one bad game against Ottawa, and then all of a sudden Matt Murray comes back in, and of course the Leeds Penguins, the Stanley Cup, and the rest of history. I think Fleury has the most to prove, and with the way he's played this year, I think it gives Vegas a chance, knowing that they can win any playoff series, any playoff game, as long as they have Fleury in net. Now, much like the Kings probably will not even count that game against Dallas the other night. No one's going to care that Marc-Andre Fleury gave up 5 or 6 goals against the Calgary Flames on Saturday, because that game meant absolutely nothing. So I think there was even one goal where Fleury just threw the puck back in, and I think Jankowski just tipped it back in, and it was like, well, that's
Microsoft
with this game for sure. It was bad. But, you know, overall, when you look at the way that Marc-Andre Fleury, especially since he came back from that concussion that cost him 2 months of this season, he came back, and that whole stretch in December, I think, is what really gave this team belief that they could probably make a deep run. You know, when he came back from the concussion, they beat Pittsburgh, they beat Tampa, they beat Washington, they beat Nashville. And there was just this sense that not only was the team playing well, but there was a sense that Marc-Andre Fleury was playing some of the best hockey of his career. And I think this renewed sense of confidence and this renewed sense of belief that he is having the best year of his career, and he's got a huge chip on his shoulder, and especially knowing in the future that there's a guy waiting in the wings in Malcolm Subban that is probably going to come and take his job at some point. There's this sense that Fleury probably thinks that he's got something left to prove. And I think this is a great first test for him. And who knows what'll happen if Vegas gets past the first round, but I think it's probably going to be mainly on the shoulders of Marc-Andre Fleury if they have any chance of going far. But the fact that he's played the best hockey of his career right now is a huge confidence boost to Vegas, at least going into this first round.
Yeah, and Fleury, his second half wasn't as strong as his first half, but those last 5 or 6 games, I think it was, if you take out that Calgary game, he had a 42-save shutout against Calgary. He stopped 29-30 against Colorado, and then 28-29 the next, or 2 nights later against Colorado. He's put up some really strong performances against some other Western Conference teams, so... I think I'm more excited for that matchup than I am for any other sort of head-to-head in this first round, because Fleury hasn't seen a ton of the Kings, because even this year he only started against them twice, I believe, out of the 4 matchups, and hadn't played them a whole lot in the past because he's in a different conference, and Quick is still sort of getting to know most of the guys on Vegas, aside from, you know, David Perron. So it's going to be interesting. I guess what's sort of the expectation from the Vegas fan base right now, Dave, Danny, do you think they were excited to draw the Kings? Were they maybe hoping for the Ducks or the Sharks instead? Or what do you think? Are people optimistic about this one?
I think people are just excited that they're in the playoffs in general, to be quite honest with you.
Good answer.
I don't think it would have mattered who they drew, who the Golden Knights drew in the first round. I think it's a bonus knowing that it's the Kings and knowing that this is the rivalry that has been hyped up for the entire season or even before that, between the Kings and the Golden Knights. It just seems like it was the most fitting rivalry. And I think the fact that it was drawn in the first round, I think, gives it that extra extra added level of excitement. But I think, in general, just the fact that this team is even here, I've gone on a broken record. You know, I've written about it multiple times this year, and I don't think it has any extra motivation. But you know, with everything that happened back in October, on October 1st, with the shooting, I think it really gave a chance for this team and this community to, you know, kind of come closer together in a way that I don't think anyone could have ever predicted. And I just feel like this team is playing for this city, and this city has fully embraced this team. And it's kind of just a perfect match, it seems like, in the biggest form of tragedy possible. So the fact that they're even in the playoffs, the fact that they won a Pacific Division title, the fact that they have 109 points in year one, people can say whatever they want about how the NHL gifted them this team of all-stars, blah, 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 whatever. This team was predicted to win at least 65 points this year by multiple media outlets, by multiple hockey experts. This team was not expected to make the playoffs in year one. But to get as far as they have, with everything that's happened in this city for the past 6 months, has been unbelievable. And I think the fact that they're even here is just – I think it's more – obviously, I think the fans want to see this team make a deep run. I think everybody believes and everybody knows by now this team is talented to get to the Stanley Cup final. It's not even a question about that. I think the fact that they're just even here right now, given everything that's happened, I think is storybook enough. And even if it went to Game 7 in Los Angeles beat Vegas, I think people would just be happy of how the season went, because nobody expected this to happen.
Yeah, and I've learned to not question the narrative of a team that has sort of rallied around their city, especially with watching the Dodgers against Houston last year in the World Series. Mm-hmm. Just it's something that I don't think is going to be discounted by anybody. And the Kings and the Golden Knights, I mean, you bring up the point of no expectations for the Golden Knights, and the Kings weren't quite there, but they were also a team that a lot of people thought were going to finish out of the race. I think the Kings and Golden Knights were predicted to finish sixth and seventh in the Pacific by the SB Nation crew. So that part of it is fun. And then of course there's the rivalry, which it was funny. There was a lot of talk before the season about which team was sort of going to take the mantle of Vegas's biggest rival. And it's sort of panned out the way it did for Arizona and the way it has for a lot of the other teams in the area, which is people just, I guess teams just sort of rally against the Kings. And if it's, there, I'm sure many reasons for it. And I think a lot of them is just that Vegas was sort of a hotbed for Kings fans. Up until the Golden Knights came to town. So it's a good way to sort of kickstart it. Sarah, is this who you wanted to see in the first round against the Kings? Actually, you know what, Danny, go ahead and answer that question first. Sorry.
Oh, no problem. To kind of piggyback off what you just said, you know,
sure.
I think it had a lot to do, I think, with the whole Kings-Knights kind of, you know, chivalrous type of medieval thingamabob that probably has to deal with the two. I think that also has a little fun element to it. I think this is the perfect matchup for Vegas. Not just so I think Vegas would win. I think it's a good test. It's a perfect test to see where Vegas is, because you're talking about you're still talking about a Kings team that's won Stanley Cups in this decade. And I think if your first test is playing against a team that has been there and done that, I think that's really the best way to prove you're to the Western Conference. And, you know, I think the winner of this series will probably get to the Western Conference Finals, because I don't think Anaheim or San Jose will have enough to, you know, take out either one of these teams, because I think there's enough firepower for both of these teams to win offensively, and I think the goaltending is great enough to, you know, get them to make a deep run. So it's going to be a good test. Obviously, I think it'd be better if this was a Western Conference Finals matchup, just because I think it would make a whole lot of sense for LA and Vegas to play in the Western Conference Finals. But as far as round one goes, especially on this side of the bracket, I honestly think the winner of this series is probably going to the Western Conference Finals straight through.
Well, if our listeners didn't already like you, it was a very savvy move to predict that Anaheim or San Jose would lose in the next round, because that's the one thing everyone's going to get behind.
Right, and also I think it's just a matter of matchups, right? I think San Jose has kind of fallen off at the wrong time. I don't know how much stock you put into their recent losing stretch, and Anaheim, for as much as I've you know, clamored over their goaltending duo of Gibson and Miller, with Gibson not really 100%, who knows how that situation is going to work. So, I mean, it's a lot of factors going into this. I think, honestly, the winner of this series goes to the Western Conference Finals.
Okay, then. Sarah, I guess the question I posed to you, and I guess if Danny is answering that maybe the Vegas-LA matchup is not one LA would have wanted with San Jose's form falling off and Anaheim with a questionable goaltending situation, what do you think? Do you think that LA is getting the matchup they want with Vegas?
You know, I do think it's a little bit of be careful what you wish for, because when, you know, playoff seeding was kind of starting to shake out, you know, I did see a lot of Kings fans wanting Vegas. And given the alternative of accidentally dropping into the other wild card slot and having to face Nashville, like, I'll take Vegas any day. But, sure. you know, what Danny was saying, and, you know, what you were saying about, you know, Houston in the World Series, and, you know, you can't discount how, you know, Vegas has come together. There's no statistic, there's no fancy stat chart that is going to be able to ever quantify that, but what the team and the city has gone through, I do think means something, and could propel them. I mean, I watched the last regular season game where Vegas, you know, lifted the banner and, you know, said that they, you know, of the banner of all the names of the people who passed away in the shooting. And I'm like sitting on my couch, like sobbing, you know, and I, you know, have no connection to the city, but just seeing how the whole, you know, everyone has just banded together, is really important for that team. That said, I would rather face Vegas, just because I can't, not from like a statistical analytical standpoint, but like, I just can't take another series with the Ducks or the Sharks right now. You know, I think, you know, the Sharks have fallen off at kind of an inopportune time. So that matchup might not have been as terrible as we, you know, initially thought it could be. If, you know, John Gibson is out for any period of time, you know, how long can Ryan Miller hold it together? Who knows? So those matchups analytically may have ended up being a better matchup, but just from a pure like fan standpoint, and not a mathy one, I think that this is going to be the series to watch if anyone on the East Coast can stay up that late.
Well, on the bright side, the Kings and Golden Knights have all their games on NBCSN instead of CNBC or the Golf Channel. So if the Coast fans do want to watch a game at 10:30 at night or 10 o'clock at night, if it's one of the games in Vegas, then they won't have to work too hard to find it. It's not quite the Western Conference version of the Philly-Pittsburgh matchup, and maybe San Jose-Anaheim comes pretty close to being that on the West side too. I'm just really excited for both of these Pacific matchups. I think the division shook out about as well as it could have for a neutral observer, especially if you weren't going to get a Calgary-Edmonton matchup, which I think happened last year. So it's a time to bring things back to the natural order, the way they should be, with the California teams in Vegas running the show and Arizona hopefully improving and joining that rotation. And then we can have our own party.
Yeah. I agree.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say kind of what Sarah said. It's also for the Kings, is if the Kings fans really wanted to draw Vegas, I think the reason why is there's still that element of the unknown. They're still an expansion team. I know we're well past the Vegas has broken every expansion record known to man, and they've, you know, exceeded every humanly possible expectation. But there's still the element of the unknown, because Vegas is still an expansion team. And you don't know what kind of a team Vegas is going to wheel out in this series. L.A. could pretty much dominate them. It could be a back-to-back series. Vegas could win in 4 or 5. A lot of things can happen. It's just the craziness with the element of the unknown, that no one knows what this team is going to do in the playoffs. And I think that's why a lot of people would prefer to draw Vegas in a situation like that, because there are teams like I mentioned, you know, L.A., for example. Anaheim's another one. And when you get to the other side of the bracket, there's Nashville. Those are teams that have been there. They have done it, or they've come close to doing it. Vegas has not reached that part yet. So until then, there's going to be that little bit of, you know, can they really do this? Can they really get that far? It's just in a level of uncertainty that even after the season Vegas has had, it still hasn't been answered.
And we've seen teams like Winnipeg and Columbus that, at least especially, I think of Winnipeg, who was still fairly fresh to the league. They got their first playoff appearance. They were the underdog in that series, but I think they got swept by Anaheim. They, in their first home game in game 3, they had the whiteout going, the place was rocking, and then they lose in overtime 5-4 and never really had a chance after that. Columbus, I don't recall exactly what happened, but they took quite some time to get their feet in the playoffs, and they still haven't really done much of anything in the playoffs. So it is going to be interesting. And Vegas, this division-winning team, is not Winnipeg or Columbus the first time they snuck into the playoffs. It's a different situation. But it'll be like you said, more of an unknown quantity, whereas if the Kings played San Jose, I think you just flip a coin and take whichever one comes up heads or tails, because they've played so many times and so many more or less closely contested series. And even with Anaheim, the Kings and Ducks have only played once in the playoffs, but they are so familiar with each other that you assume that 4 of the games are going to go to overtime and it's going to be a nightmare for both sides. So it's going to be fun. And I think that's why we wanted to talk to you on the podcast, was to sort of feel out what the Vegas situation was, and how everything was feeling, how the fans were feeling. The last question, I guess, that I have, and we can talk a little bit more too after this, but there's been a lot of talk about Vegas's form coming into the playoffs, that they haven't been the dominant team they were at the beginning of the season, and it would be impossible for any team to keep that pace up in the first season. Are you worried at all about Vegas's, you know, slight decline in a lot of areas, or do you think it's just sort of a long season and the game not being as meaningful?
I think it had a lot to do with what we kind of talked about at the top, was with the injuries to Smith and Perron. I think those two absences really kind of set this team a little bit back. And when you're trying to integrate pieces like Reeves, who, you know, might not even play in the first round, but there's still that element that he might be there just to add that physical element to the game. And then you add in a guy like Tatar, who you're taking out a guy in Brendan Leipzig who really didn't score that much, putting in a guy who has 20 goals this season, and you're kind of trying to figure out where he fits, especially when you have to counter in those injuries. I think you put all of those together, and you have a situation where Vegas was expected to not be the world beaters that they were for the first 60, 65 games of the season. I think when you get Smith and Perron back and Gerard Gallant has the ability to kind of fortify those lines and kind of lock down where he thinks each guy goes, because you already know who's going to be in the first line. You already know who's going in line two. Bottom six is kind of a whole jumbled mess because not everybody's been healthy. So I think when you get to that point, now that everybody's healthy and you can get these next couple of days to practice, and then you roll out what you know you're going to get in game one, I think you got a little bit better of a chance knowing you can go in playing the way that you played in the first half of the season, first two thirds of the season. So I really wouldn't put these last number of weeks, this last month, as much of a worry, just because I feel like the MVP of the team, which can arguably be Riley Smith, has not played. And I think when he gets back and he solidifies that first line, I think that's going to give Vegas a real opportunity to get back to the way they played for the first two thirds of the season. So I really wouldn't put a whole lot of stock into how they played in the last, you know, few weeks, months of this regular season.
Yeah, and I can't believe we got this far into the podcast without bringing up Ryan Reeves, because he was such a storyline in those earlier games against the Kings. And he was he's always been a thorn in the Kings' side, maybe not in terms of scoring or really affecting the game so much as he hits guys, and that I think he injured at least one player in that back-to-back. So with Reeves, are you expecting him to slot into the lineup in this series?
If I'm Gerard Gallant, and I would be foolish to even think of playing the role as Gerard Gallant because he's the guy that's gotten this team to 109 points, so I'm not going to question anything he does. But if I'm Gerard Gallant, with everybody coming back healthy, I think Reeves is probably a scratch, because you want to play the guys that got you to this point. And the guys that got you to this point on that bottom six are Cody Egan, Alex Tuck, now Tomas Tatar, and then William Carrier, Pierre Edouard Belmar, and Tomas Nosek. I think Carrier, when he was out, he's the guy that kind of provides the wrecking ball type aspect that Reeves brings, but only much more faster and a little bit better offensively. And I think with Gallant getting Carrier back, I think that slides Ryan Reeves as to a scratch. And then I also forget there's also Ryan Carpenter, who's been playing well, so he's another guy that might be scratched. But Reeves, I think, slides off to the bench just because you're going to get your full lineup back, and there's really no sense in having him in there, because there was really no sense of why you brought him in the first place. So if you're going to go back to the way you played in the first two-thirds of the season, the way to do that is to have Reeves sit up in the press box at T-Mobile Arena for game one.
All right, it'll be interesting to see what the decision is there, because I think Kings fans have gotten over a lot of their initial fear of Ryan Reeves after the penalties he was taking in those last two games against L.A. So before we wind down, or I guess as we wind down, do you have any questions about the Kings' outlook in this series, Danny?
Yeah, you know, I think from your guys' perspective, I'm curious as to how you feel the top six of LA will fare against the top six in Vegas. I think it's definitely a perfect matchup on both sides, because not only do you have guys that can score on both teams, but I think you have guys that can play 200-foot games on both teams, especially in that top six. So I'm kind of curious as to how you guys feel the end-to-end game for the top six will fare for both teams.
Sure. And then, listeners, I did not feed Danny this question. Danny did ask this of his own accord, but I'm glad you did, Danny, because we didn't talk about the forwards that much. Sarah, you want to take this one and run with it?
Yeah, I mean, I think that It's going to be an interesting matchup because, yeah, like you said, we have, you know, both sides kind of have guys who, you know, their top six isn't just look at me, I scored goals. You know, you have two, you know, Anže Kopitar, you know, one of the best defensive centers in the league, you know, Jeff Carter, who, you know, has really emerged in his career as being a guy who's responsible, you know, 200 feet of ice. And I'm interested to see if the series ends up with those top six, you know, players canceling each other out, and it becoming more of a depth scoring / special teams performance, which maybe worries me a little bit. But I think that it's going to be interesting to see, you know, is William Karlsson going to be going up against Anže Kopitar the whole time? Like, you know, how, you know, what's that going to look like? Yeah, I think that they, you know, in terms of, you know, their top two lines are kind of evenly matched in, you know, speedy wingers and, you know, responsible centers, with, you know, the edge on experience going a little more in LA's favor. So, yeah, I'm real curious to see if this ends up being a lot of goals scored by, you know, Cal Clifford types, just because the top two lines are canceling each other out for most of the time.
Cool. Yeah, I think it's that sort of top six showdown. I know I already mentioned that Quick and Fleury going head to head was sort of my most intriguing part of this round, but you've got we talked about Karlsson and Smith and Marchessault and whether they're going to be able to maintain their pace, but Anže Kopitar has never scored at this pace over a full season. Dustin Brown hasn't scored like this anywhere near like this in 4 or 5 years. And Carter has, I think, 13 goals in 20 games or something like that since he came back. Those are guys that all had hat tricks in the last 2 or 3 weeks, but whether they're going to be able to maintain their form is something to keep an eye on. And with maybe guys like Pearson and Toffoli who fall a little bit in that Alex Tuck vein where they've been fairly productive and they've managed to put some pucks in the net, but neither of them has really played to their full potential, at least in terms of, in Pearson's case, scoring goals, and in Toffoli's case, sort of affecting the outcome of the game and sort of making his presence felt overall. So that's sort of the forward roundup. Danny, anything else you wanted to bring up before we wind down, or anything else you want to talk more about?
Yeah, I was thinking of one more thing I thought would be good to bring up to you guys. I remember the last time, or not the last game, the other game that was in Vegas earlier this season, when Vegas won, I think that was when Subban was in net. And I remember going into the post-game scrum in LA, and I was in scrum with Doughty, and they asked him, you know, did you think Vegas would be this good? And he brought up something along, I'm paraphrasing here, but he said something along the lines of, you know, we know where we're going to be at the end of the season, but as far as them, meaning Vegas, they're not sure. So I guess my question would be, do you think there's any chance that LA might be overlooking Vegas right now?
I don't think so. I think that a little bit like Vegas, the Kings are a team that was, you know, as we've talked about, they weren't expecting to get to the playoffs. I don't think that the guys in the room care too much about who they drew. I don't think that they're looking ahead to Anaheim or San Jose purely because Vegas is the division winner. So I don't think it's a case of overlooking anybody so much as, oh, maybe the Kings weren't expecting to be in this sort of position taking on Vegas. Sarah, your thoughts?
Yeah, no, I'd agree. I think that I don't think that at least the quotes that are coming out from the team, I don't think that any of them are just being like, oh, it's Vegas, it's an expansion team, it's going to be a cakewalk. I think that they're all, you know, saying the right things from, you know, the coach on down. And have been saying it all season is that, you know, Vegas is a legitimate team. Like they're not, you know, they're not here by luck. You know, the statistics back up their performance. It's not just a fluke. So I do think that the players are taking them seriously. And I think, you know, I think that will be reflected in their play. I think maybe there's probably a segment of the fan base that might be a little like, haha, Vegas, but I would disagree with them. I think that the right people who need to take this matchup seriously are not underestimating their opponent. They've seen, you know, we've played each other four times and have seen what Vegas has to offer. So I think that everyone's got their head on straight about the matchup, and it's not just going to be a waltz into the frenetic, ridiculous T-Mobile Center and walk out with 2 points like it's nothing. I think that everyone's, you know, going into this knowing that it's going to be a tough matchup.
So that is a really interesting quote, Danny, that you brought up, because Doughty does, we've seen in the past, he does have a tendency to be pretty candid when he's talking about other teams in division, whereas a lot of players will normally just go with, they're a really good team and we have to bring our A game. Doughty's the guy who would say things like, we could see it in the Sharks' eyes after we beat them in game four that they weren't going to win the series. Like, it's interesting that Doughty had that perspective, and it's interesting, I think, it points to what Vegas has done this year, that a lot of people have probably seen that sort of perception of Vegas change over the course of the season. So it's something that I know that you've written about so far this season, how the expectations and the attitude around the team and the attitude of fans has changed this year. And it's going to be fascinating, and hopefully, I say fascinating, hopefully the Kings don't get the full force of it in the next week or two, but it's going to be, I think, one of the more interesting series of the playoffs, even speaking as from the perspective of somebody who's not vested in the Kings' outcome here. So let's wind it down real quick. Danny, do you want to talk about the site, anything to promote, or do you just want to mention who you write for?
Just if anybody's interested in following us for night's coverage, I know a lot of Kings fans probably won't care about that, but if you are interested in reading about us from the enemy's perspective, we are Knights on Ice. You can follow us on Twitter at Knights on Ice. Find us at knightsonice.com. You know, we're getting ready for the playoffs. We got a lot of good things coming up in the next couple of days as far as content-wise. We're hopefully going to get our podcast back off the ground. We haven't done one in months. Hopefully we're going to be able to do that. Also, if you're interested in what I'm writing about, you can find me on Twitter at DannyWebster21. I also do Golden Knights stuff for NHL.com, and we'll be getting that stuff going in the next few days as well. So, yeah, a lot of good times, especially a lot of good times to be here in Vegas for sure. It's definitely going to be a lot of fun, and I can't wait to see how this series unfolds for sure. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Awesome. And I think we've answered every question that anyone could possibly have, other than maybe how is Trevor Lewis going to play now that he's the proud father of twins. And as a twin myself, I can tell you the answer is Trevor Lewis is going to be incredible.
Yeah. You know, the baby effect is real. You look at Pierre-Edouard Belmar. He's been playing well since his kid was born back in January. So it's definitely not as outlandish as you think when it comes to players having kids during the season.
And real X factors there. So thanks again, Danny. I'm glad you're able to come on and give us sort of the other side here, and it's going to be a fun matchup.
Of course. Thanks for having me, guys. This was a lot of fun. Hopefully we can do it again sometime.
Sounds good. And Sarah, thanks again for joining, and to James as well, who is on to talk Kings for the first part of this podcast.
I'm going to wait for those Trevor Lewis goals.
I'm just happy the Kings are in the playoffs again. It's been so long, one season without a playoff appearance, and you really start to miss it.
Was it really that much of a concern after last year that maybe this was the decline?
Oh, heck yeah. Yeah, I think a lot of people thought the window was closing, and there was an indication that Kopitar was going to bounce back, but not to this extent. And there was a lot of aging going on. So, yeah, there was definitely a level of concern.
The NHL is so weird with the parity. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, and I think at that point you're just happy the team gets in because anything
can happen. Exactly.
So I think that's going to be it because they're going to cut me off in a minute. So thanks everyone for listening and stay with us during the playoffs. Thanks all.